House of Run podcast.
What are you into these days? Mostly running, Alan. Running.
Yeah. Look at Bill! Look at Bill!
It's coming on! Bill, coming on!
I'm not thinking about making the team. I'm thinking about gold in Munich.
What can I say? I got beat by a zebra.
Starts now.
Welcome back, everyone, to the House of Run podcast, houseofrun@gmail.com. My name is Kevin. His name is Jason. We're going to recap the New York City Marathon on this episode, talk about the 2024 marathon trials. They have a site. It is in the United States, which makes sense, in a well-known city that I'll reveal later on in the show.
I like it. I like the...
You know,
we can't gotta stick around. You got to stick around.
There's no way people know this information until we reveal it on this show. There's no way. So I'm going to talk about that. Talk about a cross country race that I went to that ended up being in the news. And then we'll read some email, of course. Jason, how's everything out your way?
It's going pretty good. Yeah. You know, nothing too crazy or exciting, you know, just regular days now.
Regular days.
Right. Well, I guess it's election day. So that's, you know,
we are recording this. Well, we are recording this on election day, and you're in what has become the new most consequential state in the United States. And by default, the world as well, too. So you're at the epicenter of it there.
Everyone looking eyes on Nevada as it should be.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play Home Means Nevada again.
Exactly, yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of info from the ground? What's it like outside? Are the
I have not been outside yet today.
Okay.
It is 9 in the morning, so, you know, I've done a couple work meetings this morning.
Pro.
Hoping people at my work do not listen to this, because, you know, I should be working right now. But no, I work from home, so it's, you know, I'm going back and
break.
Forth. Yeah, I'm going back and forth, so it's all good. I, you know, I work after hours, work before hours, it all works out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll probably make it out at some point. See what you know. I'll take some polls, some straw polls.
Take temperature of the room. Hey, speaking of polls.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with poll.
I was gonna say, is this gonna be a pole vault story? That's the only correlation I see here.
Mondo, right? No, I have no idea where I was gonna go with that. That was it. New York City. What'd you think?
I mean, it was interesting for sure, right? That's definitely something you could say. I mean, both races surprise, like, I guess not surprise winner for the men, but like the race was insane. And then completely shocked on the women's side. So, but yeah, I don't know what was happening with Nascimento? Is that how you say it?
Nascimento, yeah. Nascimento, Daniel Doe Nascimento.
Man, I mean, it's one thing to go out in 61 in New York. It's another to do it during, like, kind of a hot day for a marathon. I want to buy up all the stock, though, because I'm like, this dude's going to be really good.
He's done this before. He did this in Tokyo.
He's got to figure this out, because this is obviously one of the worst race plans I've ever seen in history. But like, he got pretty far, and if he even went out too fast and not just impossibly fast, if he goes out in 63, does he win this race? Like, probably. I don't know. But like, yeah, going out in 61, going out in world record pace through 10K or whatever. It's just like, wow. I don't know. You get hyped up. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the race plan was, I guess, for him.
The plan was probably to put some pressure on the rest of the field, but then you just end up putting pressure on yourself when you run 4:20 for the second mile. Yes. I just don't understand how that happens, but once you're committed, you're committed. That Muay Thai record is really good, and he was 2 minutes up on it halfway, right?
That's bonkers.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
61:22 at the half. You should not be under 20. You shouldn't be under 203 pace in New York. Unless you're Kipchoge.
He's and the even only guy. Yeah. And even and, then. Yeah.
Be, yeah. You might want to be cautious, because it's hard. It's a hard course. And then he has a bathroom break at mile 18, and then he walks for a little bit before finally collapsing. And he's okay.
Yeah, so that's the important thing, is he is okay. So I you know, feel like I can be more free about, hey man, what the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
It's a real bad race plan.
Yeah, if he doesn't do that, you think he's at least legit top three, maybe even contending for the win. Yeah, Chibet, though, took over right from him, and then it was just game over at that point, even though Chibet slowed down too. But Nascimento, he was great for content for half the... I mean, that was just... That's why you like that race, is because it makes the early stage of a marathon interesting. And I love watching marathons. I'm probably in the minority when it comes to that. I accept that.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the beginning miles can be very boring and they're not essential. You can fast forward. You can go 2x speed if you're watching the replay. I just kept wanting to see more and more with him. Like, what's the split going to be? And then his adventure between 18 and 21, where he's in the porta potty, then walking, and then collapsing. It's just, that's a whole journey right there. That's Shakespearean, pretty much.
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, you see what he's running, you're just like, okay, well, this can't happen, right? You knew it was, but like I said, the bathroom break, the walking, then starting to run again, and then the collapse is obviously where it's like legit concerning, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like, there was no scenario where this was going to, even if the day wasn't this hot, like if this would have ended poorly. I mean, Mutai ran what, 2:05?
Yeah.
I mean, he was so far ahead of that. Mm-hmm. Not say Mutai's record's unbreakable, but like, there's one dude I think could break it. Mm-hmm. But I just, this is one of those things you just kind of get blown away by. I mean, the winner, you know, Chibet wins in 2:08:40. It's just, and he slowed down, you know, and he didn't.
Oh, yeah.
in stupid pace. So it's like everyone was struggling because it was a tough day, right? Yeah. I mean, it was warm, humid, you know, from what everyone was saying, and. Yeah, I mean, it's just there was no scenario where that was going to work out well. But I just look at his talent and kind of I'm like, man, I think he could be really, really good. But obviously, you gotta, you know, figure this whole thing out here.
He made it basically impossible for himself because, yeah, go out in 63.
Yeah, or that's like, that's too fast.
Yeah.
But at least it's possible.
And I think Mutai's record is beatable by somebody other than Kipchoge.
Okay.
But it's not going to be beaten by somebody who goes out in 28:42 for the first 10K. It's just not going to happen. Like, you can't do that to yourself. There are still laws of the human body that apply to the marathon, even though we have super shoes and we have a bunch of athletes breaking barriers left and right. One thing that was... It's just there's a limit to what they can show because you can't have a camera on every single person in the elite field in the marathon. So you had the chase pack shot, right? And then you have Chibet break away from the chase pack. And then once Nascimento goes down and Chibet takes over, it was almost just like, all right, this is it. Now we went from a one shot before of the gentleman from Brazil. Now it is going to be the one shot of the gentleman from Kenya all the way in.
Yeah.
There was very little side by side, shoulder to shoulder running on the men's side that was shown on the screen.
Yeah. And I mean, Katana was, you know, not too far behind, but like he
closed, right?
Yeah. Closed. It was, yeah, exactly. Like it wasn't, they weren't, like I said, there was no side by side. There was no like, hey, pushing back and forth, what's happening? It just kind of shifted from one to another. But I mean, Chibet with another victory. So he's up there with anybody who has an argument for, you know,
yeah,
the second best guy.
Yeah.
So
at 30K, I'm looking at this right now, 30K, Chibet had 25 seconds on the pack. Then at 2 kilometers later, 28 seconds. At 35K, it was down to 16 seconds. But still, 16 seconds at 35, it's still significant. And then it was down to 11 seconds at 40K. And then the finish was 12 seconds. So there was never really, I never really felt like he was seriously threatened. It was more Chibet had put in the work, and then Quintana was closing there, but I always thought he was going to be able to get to the line. But yeah, Nascimento just made this thing very, very crazy. What did you think about – did anything surprise you outside of the guy collapsing
right
after going on a world record pace? You just don't it wasn't his first marathon either.
Yeah.
Which is weird. You'd think he'd have some sense of the pace and not go to that level.
No, that was full on, you know, Alan Webb dropping a whatever it was, 23-second 200 or
the 12-100 in the middle of the or 11-900. Yeah.
It's just like one of those things where you just go like, that's not going to work. Like, it's just not. You know, I mean, I appreciate your, you're going for it, but this is not the best solution. And but I mean, outside of the very huge thing that didn't go to, you know, form, the rest of the race seemed, you know, about right. I mean, the American men, you know, what, 9, 10, 11? I thought maybe one would have had a chance to be at, you know, finish. I mean, obviously Rupp didn't finish.
Didn't finish at all, yeah.
Yeah, but that also, does that shock me? Not really.
No.
It also wouldn't have shocked me if he finished third. But he was, you know, he's kind of in that middle ground where, and it's probably tilting a little more like Bekele kind of, like tilting more towards like, this is probably real close to the end.
Yeah. It wasn't a great day for the American men. He says something about the American women too, because you thought, all right, they can, even without Rupp, all right, they can crack into, they can get more in the top 10 than they did. And they got 9 and 10. And you look at it, someone like Albert Krug, who won it last year, got 7th. Oh, okay. Like that's not too bad to be just a little bit back from him. But there's also runners on here that they should be able to beat. Right? Like in a good setting, right? Like Mayuchi, Yoro Izaka. Suguro Osaka's legit, but nobody's picking him for the medal stand. El Arabi, same thing. Like there wasn't any unbeatable guys. And then you go farther down on the men's side, Fauble 9, Fisher 10, then Ward's at 217, Leonard Carrier's at 217. Kipchirchir debuted, he ran 228. He was a 10th American. It just wasn't really any threats there. And maybe we're in the position, right, where we have Connor Mance is going to be taking over as the Rupp figure, and then a bunch of question marks moving forward. But Mance still has a little ways to go to get to where Rupp was, or a lot of ways to go to get to where Rupp was.
Right.
But Rupp was just, you know, U.S. men's marathoning basically, you know, since Meb retired, came and went however well Rupp ran, right? Because he was the one guy who could win majors after Meb, and he was the one guy who could get medals. And then you see what happens when he's out. What do you think of his – do you think this is it for him?
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably have one more – like, I think he'll have one more, like, top five type performance. But I don't think he really does anything else besides that. I mean, it's, you know, like I say, he's been good for a long time. Injuries and whatever, DNFs, they start to pile up, and it's just hard to keep going, right? I mean, it's, like I said, it wasn't that long ago that he ran really well, but
last year he got second in Chicago.
Yeah, but like it's just, I don't know, every year that goes by, it just gets that much tougher, right? And you only get the couple chances at the marathon.
Yeah.
So I'm not calling him completely washed, but I like I said, I think he probably has one more marathon of consequence.
Mm. Jason's number is 1.
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm inclined to believe that. I don't see a path where he gets back to 206. And even if you get back to 206, you got to be in the right field in order to finish in the top 3 or 5 or whatever we're deeming is successful.
Yeah.
The second place in Chicago was really good, but that was also not against the best in the world. There were a lot of people missing from that race. Yep. You know, there's people missing from every single major. That's how majors work. But if you're saying, is he going to be able to contend for a medal again? Is he going to be able to get top three in a major? I'm not seeing it either. And it is weird, though, because he got back from the Achilles injury and he got back to a place last year where he was running solid. But you're right. Every time you have a setback, and this is very clearly a setback now, because now we have 2 points. You have the world's race where he finished 18th, and then you have this DNF. So that's back to back. So that leads me to believe that this is a very, very clear trend. However, you're right. Maybe one more random top five.
I feel like there's, and maybe that Chicago race was the one more, and now done. But like, it always seems like there's that one last one that's, you know, yeah, whatever. He finishes 4th in Boston next year or something, like, you know, where it's just like, okay, that was a good performance. And then it just kind of fades. But
I'm assuming he's going through 2024.
Yeah.
Do you think he has a shot at the team?
Yeah. Yes. But only because the depth, I mean, I guess there's depth, but it's just like the high end talent isn't still really there. Yeah. Like you said, you know, Mance, you feel pretty good about. You know, someone like Scott Fauble can finish, I don't know, 6th at any, like, you know, American major marathon.
Yeah, yeah.
On the right day, you know, 5th or 6th or whatever. But, like, I don't know if there's any – is there anybody else who you feel like is, like, a lock to run, you know, 208 on a
– No.
On a trials?
No, 208, no, not even 210.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, and it's, like, there's been a lot of guys who have broken 210 now, which, great. But, I mean, even a – diminished Rupp, granted 2 years, or I guess a year and a half, is still miles away, but like it seems like even a not great Rupp, you know, could run 209 and finish 2nd or 3rd.
I could see after this marathon though basically clearing the decks and saying, all right, I'm just gonna go all in on trials.
Yeah,
that's my goal. It's just, can I make one last team? And everything I do is going to be pointing to that, so I'm not going to rush back until I'm fully healthy. Because you're right, the men have gotten a bit faster, but it hasn't. There hasn't been this explosion of, oh man, look at all these American men running 207. Like, that hasn't happened yet. So,
right.
I think if he gets into reasonable shape, he can get a top three spot. Look at who's finished in the top three in the last couple trials. Hasn't necessarily been somebody who's like Abdi made the last Olympics. I mean, just. So, right? So unless something dramatic is going to happen with men's marathoning depth in the next 2 years, which, do you think that's going to happen? Because I don't. We've been waiting forever for it to happen.
I think predicting it is, I'm done trying to predict like that. Oh, this is going to be the year that a bunch of dudes break through. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It'll happen at some point, but I'm not going to guess when it's going to happen.
Well, you're going to have the one young guy, the one guy in the middle of his career, and then you're going to have the one old guy. And it could be Mance is the youngish guy and Rupp's the old guy.
Right.
Who makes it. But if I had to pick right now, yeah, it's just a matter of, can he hang on for another 2 more years until, well, yeah. Less than 2 years.
Yeah, I say, I mean, it's really, yeah, it's like 15 months or something probably. But it's, even then, like, it's, you know, injuries, different things adds up. Like, I mean, it's like, if he's healthy, do I think he'll make it? Probably.
Yeah.
But it's like, the health is a huge question mark.
We'll talk more about where those marathon trials are going to be coming up after the break. All right, women's race. Sharon Lochetti.
Yeah.
Got the win. Man, this was just a complete shock to me. I don't think we talked about it at all in the preview, nope. Did we?
Pretty sure we did not mention her name.
I'm familiar with her work, right?
Yeah.
10K champion at Kansas. Upset Krisha Schweizer that year in 2018. Schweizer came back later on, won the 5K. Lochetti had some great cross performances, but I think her last cross championship, she was in the 40s, and she just was one of those people, other than that 10K, who you always thought, you know, they're going to be in the mix, they're going to run a fast indoor 5,000, just, but you didn't know what was going to happen post-college, because you never know with a lot of these athletes what's going to happen, and she made the decision to move to the roads. Obviously, that was good. And then made the decision to move up to the marathon. But this was her debut, and I said this on the Flow Track pod yesterday, the thing that impressed me the most was that once it came down to the final three, you're in Central Park, you, Gebre Selassie, and Sal Peter, so the world champion and the bronze medalist from the world championships. And that bronze medalist has run 217. So a 217 and 218 woman. She could have settled.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been so easy.
I did not think she was going to. I mean, of that group, I was like, all right, that's still, though. She's going to finish top three. That's great.
Most people would have settled in that situation. But she's got that dog in her, man. I don't know. Like, that was crazy. That was crazy how she just was like, nope, my first one, I'm going to win it. Bye.
Yep. Yeah, that's I was completely shocked, too. I mean, Sal Peter, Gebre Selassie, Obiri was there earlier and faded, you know, down to six. But, like, there was some real talent in here.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I think Kipagat finishes fourth still.
love it. Because
that's it. She's going to do that for the next 20 years. But, like, yeah, it was like, this was not a, you know, an easy win. This was, there was plenty. There was so many other women, you know, that we mentioned in the preview that was like, oh, yeah, they're, you know, there's a reason we didn't mention Lucchetti at all. But really impressive, obviously, to get that win. It's a tough day, you know, for your debut too. Like Obiri, like that probably, you know, it's like you're figuring it out. It's hot. It's just a, it's not an easy necessarily, you know, it's not a flat course. It's not a fast course. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot of reasons this can go wrong. Yeah, she just got rid of all that and just, you know, wins it. So that's an impressive victory.
Yeah, you're right. You're just creating more reasons why this was just an epic performance. I didn't even mention the weather. Yeah. The course being hard, the competition being stout. And again, were there a lot of top women missing? Yeah, of course, because there's too many to mention. But Sal Peter and Gebre Selassie and who else was up there? You said Edna Kiplagat was there.
Cheptoo and Obiri. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think Obiri will still be really good.
Yeah.
I don't know, this doesn't take away from that for me.
But like Cheptoo was on the podium last year. Obiri, she has had an amazing track career, and her half marathon PB is 4 minutes better than Lochetti's. There was a lot of people there that if you were kind of formulating an argument or you had a theory of who's going to perform the best on that day that you would put ahead of Lochetti, and it didn't matter, which this is why we love New York, right? And Boston, just you can actually have a genuine upset, not, oh, the third seed won. It's like, no, right. If we were seeding these things, actually, let's look that up. Let me go back to that start list.
Oh,
let me
see.
Well, I just want to see from last week's pod who I had listed. I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I had 12 on my short list.
Yeah.
So at the best, she would have been, I think, a 13th seed. I'm serious.
No, I don't disagree. That's the, you know, yeah, she would have, I mean, she would have been in the group with like the American women, right? Like where it was just like, yes. Hey.
At the back, know, probably.
They could finish, yeah, they could finish 6th or 7th, 8th, whatever, like, but not a realistic shot of winning at all.
100%, 100%, and she did it, and she did it in a race that was close, and she was smart, right? There was that move, and then she was towards the back, and then she came back and closed it up, and yeah, time is irrelevant, but just an incredible. What did you think about Obiri? She was the debutante that people were talking about, and she got sixth.
Yeah, and she was, you know, she was in it, you know, pretty late. I mean, it was, what, around 35? That she started falling.
Let me pull it up here.
Somewhere in between. It was like 5K to go that she, you know, that she, I think she started falling away.
Yeah, she was in the lead at 35K. And then 40K, she was no longer in the lead. She was 47 seconds off.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it caught up to her. Like I said, hot day, kind of tough course. Just, you know, not to say you can't overcome it because obviously Lucchetti did. But it's one of those things where it was just like, oh, okay. She probably learned some lessons from that. And I think she'll be really good. You know, she'll probably run like Berlin or London next year and probably run something really, really fast.
Yeah. I think for the sake of selection, Kenya is lucky they don't have a Olympic Games next year.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be, oh my God. I mean, they weren't good at it when there were three obvious choices. There's going to be like six people to choose from the next one, and it's going to be brutal.
Yeah. Six minimum. I was just shocked. And because it was the 13th seed, right? At best. If the 8th seed wins, you're still surprised, but not really. But for Lucchetti to do that, I did not have that coming. Like, it was just, I did not see that coming at all. And it's not because, sometimes you're not familiar with a person. Like, again, cover in college.
Yeah.
Very familiar with what she's done, but also know that recently she's had some decent results on the road, but there was nothing to indicate this.
No. She, I mean, this was a out of nowhere type performance. I mean, like I said, she won a 10K. That's impressive for sure, but that was several years ago. And there wasn't a lot to grasp onto since then. It was completely out of nowhere.
Yeah. What'd you think of the American performances?
I guess similar to the men's side, where it was kind of like, oh, okay. Like no one seemed to have a great day. No, it's not like they were bad. It was just kind of like, oh, this went to pretty close to form.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, D'Amato found her limit, apparently, which, I thought she'd do a little better, but also I'm not surprised that your fourth marathon and the last one was whatever, 7 weeks ago, that mm-hmm. it finally just was a little too much. So, overall, it's kind of like, okay, that's fine. It's what, 7, 8, 10?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think we said there would be three in the top 10. That seemed about right. I thought there was a chance for maybe somebody to finish fifth or something. But if you look at the names besides Lucchetti, like Salpeter, Gebrselassie, Kiplagat, Cheptoo, and Obiri, it's like, okay, American women shouldn't have beaten any of those women, right? Like, those are all
correct.
A clear step ahead.
Lucchetti, ironically.
Lucchetti. Yeah, right. Like that's, but those other five, like 2 through 6, are like very obvious. Well, the American women aren't beating them unless they have a bad day or the Americans have a good day.
Yeah. So, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, it seemed to kind of down the middle for me for the American.
Yeah. All right. Well, what about, overall takeaways? Anything else surprise you?
No, I mean, like I said, the Lucchetti was out of nowhere. The rest of the field seemed about right. You know, I thought Obiri would win it, but like I'm also not shocked with how it played out. The women's race makes a lot of sense. It's like going forward, it's like watching Lucchetti and Nascimento, like, and just being like, hey, what happens with these two? Because I don't know. There could be a lot of potential there. The Lucchetti one, I mean, who knows? Like,
Could
you run 218?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But like that's, it was so out of nowhere. So it's just going to be like something to monitor. And then Nascimento, as you mentioned, like has run marathons before, but like the talent seems like it's huge. And I just want to see him get it right.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, as I mentioned before, all these American athletes are going to be focused on one thing. One thing only, that's the Olympic trials for the marathon coming up in early 2024. And there was no site selected. Didn't even have a date, Jason.
Yeah.
No date.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week. We're like, well, it's some point. Yeah.
It is going to occur at some place. At some point and some place. Well, a little bit before we started recording, USATF has announced that the 2024 USA Olympic team trials in the marathon will be held in Conshohocken, Pennsylvania. No, it's Orlando. It's Orlando. Orlando. Saturday, February 3rd. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Okay. Orlando. I know Orlando wasn't on my thought process on that.
You haven't been following all the bids?
Yeah. It wasn't on my list. You want somewhere warm because it's February, right?
But not too warm.
You're not picking anywhere above the middle of the country, right? Because it's just gonna be a little too cold.
Correct.
So we've done Houston, Orlando. It makes sense. I have no idea what that course will be. I'm hoping it goes through Harry Potter World and Disney and
the Magic's down there. The Magic's court field.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, arena, exactly.
Stadium, whatever.
Yeah, that's just right through center court.
The Orlando Breakers.
Paolo Banchero can, you know, do some stuff involved in it. Like, it's totally fine. I have no idea. Like I said, I didn't think of Orlando as a thing, but I'm sure it'll be good.
They beat out Chattanooga.
Hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, a lot of Sunbelt action, right?
Right. Yeah.
Atlanta last time and Houston before. Phoenix needs to bid. It's usually good weather in or Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, why not? You know?
2028. You guys have a 4-mile stretch of road that you can have them run back and forth on.
So many of them, yeah.
It's just good there's a date.
Yes.
Date so that way they know a location even better. A course would be spectacular because then they can start preparing. No idea why it took this long. Maybe we'll figure out later on. Probably just the case of not a ton of bids. So when there's not a ton of bids, there's fewer people asking, hey, what's the status of my bid? Did you guys get my email about the bid? Have you seen that? And when that's not there, they just go on their own schedule. So early February 2024 in Orlando, that's going to prep for Paris, which, you know, pretty much the Paris of Florida is Orlando. So now I think that kind of makes sense. They have Euro Disney.
That's true.
And then you have actual Disney.
Yeah, I've never been to Orlando. I mean, I would like to, you know, do with the parks and stuff down there at some point. That'd be fun.
Have you been to Florida?
Only on a flight connection, so I don't think that counts.
Okay, it doesn't count.
Yeah, I agree.
Never been to Florida. I think hosting these things, there's got to be a way to make it easier because the courses are relatively straightforward in terms of just you're not creating a brand new course, or you are creating a brand new course, excuse me. You're not creating the traditional marathon course where it's very little overlap. Like, you're doing something that's spectator friendly. The Los Angeles course went essentially up and down one road a whole bunch of times. Now, it was a pain in the ass to shut it off. I'm sure it was. But it's not the same thing as having 50,000 runners run through 5 boroughs in New York. You look at the logistical issues with that or with Boston, you're like, okay, that is a tough haul. But I wonder if there's a way to make this stuff even easier to get more bids. I know you want to run it near people so that we can get fans. But every major city has a spot where they could do this. If you're saying it's going to be a loop course, that just makes it so much simpler in terms of what you need to shut off and where you need to get people to. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they don't want to waste the money on the bid. It's you know, the better investment is to invest in a mass race where you have tens of thousands of runners.
Right. Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about elite athlete setup or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things. I mean, you know, as long as they set up a decent course, and it seems like they want to try. I mean, last couple seems like the courses are faster, mm-hmm. Which fine with too. So,
well, Atlanta wasn't fast.
I guess,
Atlanta,
yeah, no, that's a good point. I was like, just thinking Houston, I guess, but
Houston was fast. LA was flat, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess I don't worry too much about it, like just where it's going to be. Like I said, I'm glad that there's a date. But yeah, hopefully it'll be good weather and, you know, fun races. I'm sure it will.
Yeah. I would worry about it being too hot.
Yeah. I don't know what Orlando's like in February. I mean, it could be humid, I suppose. And I just,
yeah. Well, the low doesn't get humid, but yeah, the low doesn't get that low, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, baby steps here. We have a location. We have a place.
Yeah. We got a time, place. It's good enough, right?
Correct, correct, correct. All right. We'll get to email in a second. Oh. The former UT runner who ran in the high school race in Texas. This is crazy for a couple reasons. One, I was there. So I was there to support my brother.
Yeah.
And his team. At the state championship meet. They did great. Shout out to them. Vandergriff High School.
Brother Colin, well done.
Two, we were just talking about something like this one or two episodes ago about how it's really hard to regulate different areas of the course. Now, I recorded a pod right after. Like, I drove straight from this meet to record a pod on Friday. And by that point, I knew a little bit of what happened, but not all of it. And I thought, because what I was hearing was that the athlete, Brendan Hebert, started the race and ran the entire thing. Turns out, after looking at video, he came in later on in the race, about a mile or a K in or so, hopped in the race, but then proceeded to run the rest of the race, go through the finishing chute, where he finished second, crossed the line second.
Yeah.
Can't really say finished second because he didn't run the whole race. But for a while there, he was up near the front. I was watching. He looked a little older, but I'm not that familiar with high school cross country here.
Right.
If I was, I probably would recognize him because he ran at a local high school and he wore that high school's jersey in the race on Friday. Other people around me were saying, wait, what's the, like, that person looks really old. And then after the race, people were saying, hey, that team didn't qualify anybody for this meet. And they didn't qualify any individuals either. So what was going on? And then it just sort of snowballed from there. But I've never seen anything like this. I've never heard of anything like this, especially at this stage. This is a state championship.
Right.
You can see, all right, someone hops in at an invite or something. But I had never seen something, and especially at the front of the pack. Be one thing if he's jumping in and placing 67th or something like that, but to have that prominent a position in the race and then finish all the way through, just strange. Have you seen or heard anything like this before?
No, this is really, really strange. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, state championship. I don't know how many runners were in this race, but probably a lot. A Texas state championship.
200 or so, maybe. It was big, but it didn't look extraordinary. When they were passing by me at the finish line, Jason, they were coming pretty quickly, but I'm not. Yeah.
Well, and it's one of those things, like you said, even if, hey, no one from that school qualified or whatever, it's just too much stuff to keep track of, like in the moment. Like, it's stuff you could figure out with the results after the fact. Like, if you're like checking someone's number and you're like, wait, this guy doesn't exist. Why is he here?
150 people.
Yeah, but like that's it's a lot where you're just like, okay, this is, and why would you notice, right? It's just, okay, this guy, let's run the race, because you would never think a random person, random college student, would jump in the race. Just real strange. I don't know if he was, you know, Uncle Rico style, just like, I could win state. Like, if I was just in high school now, I could probably win state. And he almost did, but he did not.
But then he didn't start with everybody. No, it's just either makes way, the whole thing so confusing.
Yeah. It's a bad move. I'm not supporting it, but it's just weird.
It was strange. I don't know the motivation. I know people are trying to guess the motivation. Maybe one day we'll figure out what the motivation was.
Yeah, because he said, I just ran it for fun, which doesn't.
Well, there's no works. No other reason you'd run it.
Right? Yeah.
To get arrested. I mean, right. What's the other objective there? It seems it was bizarre, and it was just bizarre afterwards when I was there to hear people start discussing it, because there's so many other things to be discussing in a state championship.
Yeah.
And to have this brought up was really weird. But doesn't this sort of go back to what we were talking about before, where like this doesn't happen at track, right? No one jumps in 200 meters in.
Yeah. It's way to more a track obvious race. That way.
Yeah, because someone, an official or a security or something, someone steps in and stops it. And it didn't happen. Like, now you can't have officials standing every 50 yards. But also, it just, I don't know, someone radios? I don't know, and then what do you do? You're going to run out there and
tackle,
pull somebody off the course. It all just seems very difficult to manage from a just logistics standpoint. It's just one of the things in cross country. We take for granted when we run through a park, we take for granted that this sort of weird stuff can happen.
Yeah, and it's really not preventable without an extreme amount of more people or money or whatever it is. So it's just like, you know, unless you're doing a real small loop or something like that that has eyes on it at all times, like, yeah, this stuff could happen. It doesn't really, but I guess it could.
Yeah, it could be. It could be a lot worse, basically.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying. Hopefully, there's not more of this. It was a stunning, strange scene there, in light of especially what we talked about before with. Would the official have given a red card? Do you think?
I would hope so. I hope it's a full-on red card. Yeah, I don't think you need to escalate that. You just go right to the top.
Straight red.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. All right, let's go to email.
Yeah.
houseofrun@gmail.com is the email address. Let's see what we got going on in the inbox, Jason.
Yeah, a little shorter record time between episodes, you know. We did a Thursday, Tuesday record, so
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But still a few in here.
Yeah. This is from Ward.
Yeah, Belgium.
He says, might have ended up in the spam. Okay, here we go. Ward from Belgium here. I was running for my club at the Brussels Ekiden last Saturday, which also doubled as the Belgian Championship Ekiden, which is apparently a thing. As I finished warming up, I jogged back in the direction of the Koning.
Oof.
Oh my gosh. I'm not going to. Boudewijn Stadium.
Yeah, the Boudewijn.
Budgen?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Where the teams did their handovers to the next runner. On the way there, I saw a face I thought I recognized, but I could not remember from where. As I stared at the guy, he also started looking back at me. Not to make that interaction too long and awkward, I did the non-committal smile and nod of, good to see you again. Sorry, no time to stop and talk up now. He smiled and nodded back, and that was that. Until maybe 10 meters later, when I realized the person I had just nodded was no. Not our very own chief, but none other than Bashir Abdi. It would have been cool if it was chief. I guess he must be used to the stares by now since he had taken my awkward smile and nod in stride. I thought about asking for a photo, but it seemed weird to bother him for that. I glanced back just to confirm it really was him, saw someone else taking a photo with him, and decided I might as well bother him for one too. He was happy to indulge me. To add, early in the stadium, the announcer had mentioned Bashir Abdi was taking part in the charity event during the Ekiden. The announcer had not introduced him as the Eugene Bronze Medalist. He had also not introduced him as the Tokyo bronze medalist. No, the announcer decided to introduce him as the 20,000-meter world record holder. World best holder? I hope he only decided to use that bit of information because the record happened in this particular stadium as a gimmick during the Brussels Diamond League. As for the race, we finished fourth. P.S. I don't know if you care, but your website seems down. Jason. Oh well, yeah, we're on. Yeah, we don't have the site anymore, right?
Oh, yeah, but it was up there for a bit. I didn't realize it.
Yeah, because everything's just on. If you Google House of Run, it just redirects to our Simplecast page where we host the pod. That's basically where it's going to live, I think, right?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody.
Unless you don't want to do
that. Yeah, I don't know if anybody else is trying to access the regular website, but all the.
There was
the
nothing same, on it except
the same information. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's still on the Simplecast site.
Yeah. This is awesome. This is great.
That's really cool. But I do love that he's the 20K record holder as opposed to a two-time world medalist.
Yeah. It's not what I would have gone with.
Right? I mean, you could throw that in there. Hey, yeah. Olympic bronze medalist, world championship bronze medalist, and in Brussels set the 20K world record.
So you line that up pretty well.
That's
sounds like you have experience announcing comedians at
right?
open mic.
That's true. And
you've seen him on Netflix. You've seen him on Hulu. He's also got the 20,000-meter world record.
He won the Ekiden. That's I mean, it's still awesome though. You got to meet him, and yeah, it's really cool.
Marshall from St. Louis, formerly of Iowa.
Drake.
Hello, Kevin and Jason. While listening to you debate potential event moves for Sydney and a thing, you failed to mention the option for Sydney to move up to the 800. In looking at the Budapest schedule, there's a possibility for Sydney to double in the 400 hurdles and the 800. Sadly, the 400 flat 800 double is not viable, as round one of the 800 is during day 5 morning session and the flat 400 final is during day 5 evening session. And he writes out the schedule. Day 3 evening, 400 hurdle prelims. Day 4 evening, 400 hurdle semis. Day 5 morning, 800 prelims. Day 6 evening 400 hurdle final, day 7, evening 800 semi, day 9, evening 800 final. It's a brutal schedule, and the odds of this happening are slim to none, although they're slightly higher than a thing attempting this double. However, if the hypothetical double above were happened, maybe Sydney and a thing chained together and Sid can keep up with thing during 800-meter workouts, why not? Where does it rank in terms of most challenging doubles? Sans Hassan's triple, I think, would be the most incredible world championship performance in my lifetime. All the best. That is Marshall. Yeah, it would be better than Hassan's. It's not going to happen. So
it wouldn't happen. It's definitely the craziest double of all time. I'm not sure if it's crazier than Hassan's triple.
Oh, I think it is, just because she's not even an 800-meter runner.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... But it's like the idea of that double, because those might be the two most painful races in all of track and field.
Yes.
And yeah. So doing both of those is absurd. But also, I don't know. I watched Hassan do that triple, and I still think she's tired from it, because it was so hard and brutal.
But I know you have the thing where every 400-meter hurdler is automatically great at the 800, but it isn't necessary. Like, that just doesn't happen. You don't see 400 hurdle 800 doubles in college. I know we didn't see the 15, you don't see the 15-5 triple, 15-5-10 triple happen, well, ever at the Olympics, but it makes more logical sense. Just to be able to do 400 hurdles and 800 at that level would be nuts. I think Sydney has given us, let's be happy with what she's going to try to do, which is try to break the 400-meter world record.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how hard 47.60 is.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to take everything she has to try to get that. And I'll admit if I'm wrong, I don't think I'm going to be wrong on this one. She's going to need to be focused on this thing for the next couple years to make it happen. By that point, if she gets that and then wants to run an 800, that's fine. I don't think she's going to be running 157 800s and being in the mix. I don't think that's going to be something that's in the cards. All her attention, well, not all of her attention, because she says she's still going to do the 400 hurdles a little bit, but whatever remaining parts of her attention are left are going to be focused on the four, and not just becoming the best 400-meter runner in the world, but becoming the fastest one of all time, which is just such a audacious goal. It is, it's hard to believe it's not going to take her a lot of time to get that one done.
Yeah, I think she can do it, which is kind of crazy. I don't think it's like better than 50%, but I think she's got a legit shot to break that world record. All I really want is for Sydney to be able to double in the 4 and 400 hurdles, and Athing Mo to be able to double in the 4 and the 8. Obviously the schedule, as you mentioned, doesn't necessarily allow that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, honestly, I prefer that over Sydney running the 800.
I don't have any, I don't need to see her on the 800.
We're not getting it next year, but maybe in the Olympics, if we can adjust the schedule for, assuming Athing Mo wins another gold medal and Sydney wins another gold medal, which they're going to probably, two, three time defending gold medalists, can we just allow them to do their doubles? That seems reasonable.
Yeah. Next up from Zach. Hey, Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Perform your civic duty and vote, since the Nevada races are real close and your vote matters, unlike most people. Phil Knight contributed $7+ million into the Oregon governor's race. How would you guys allocate $7 million in track and field world? To help put it in perspective, assuming there are 40 events, that only comes out to $175,000 each. That is interesting to break it down that way.
Yeah, it really is.
If I had Phil Knight money, I would spend millions of dollars tearing down a perfectly good stadium and replacing it with one that has comfy seats for a once in a generation track meet that's never going to return. I think that's what I would do if I had that much money. And a tower.
A towerman. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're doing it that way, I did vote, by the way. So I hope everyone else did. I know by the time you hear this,
it's over done. And it went poorly.
Yeah. But, I hope everybody did. And if I had the $7 million towards track world, I think I end up putting it towards, like, I can't spread it out. Well, like, I'm probably not spreading it out evenly among 40 events, first of all. But I'm probably putting together, like, a few really, really high-end meets and making with big prizes to make all of the big matchups that I want to see. So, I mean, you know, it's whatever, the men's 400-meter hurdles, you know, getting those crazy time bonuses involved as well. The shifts of, you know, getting, you know, some Sydney a thing Mo matchups.
Short just, of practice.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, but like, get, you know, doing these things that really, that we want to see that we don't get to see very often, and having huge prize money, but also having even bigger time bonuses to force people to really try to do something. And I think it's just like three meets that I go nuts on.
Well,
and maybe making Mondo like attempt insane levels, like every you know, 3 centimeters or 2 centimeters more is like another $100,000 or whatever it is.
I don't know how much mileage you get with only 7 million though.
Yeah, it doesn't, and that's the thing, is like you got to do it pretty,
you only get one meet maybe.
Yeah, and maybe that's it, maybe it's just one just insane meet and you make sure that it's on a massive you know, like a network or whatever it is. And you just try to get some traction with that.
It's in the metaverse.
That's the only way I want to do it. Yes, I want weird cartoons versions of everybody.
I
think spreading it out too much, it's like, okay, well then it's, you'll barely see the ripples of it.
I divided it, I took the 175 divided by 8, like $21,000. So if you did like prize money for like top 8, the average would only be $21,000, which is nice, especially if you're not used to getting anything. But it just,
yeah, for the really high end people, you know, I feel like for the best athletes who are, you know, who make at least a pretty decent living, I feel like I need to go six figures for a prize.
How much do you think it would cost to get Kipchoge to New York or Boston?
Ooh, that's a good question. What is his normal appearance fee? I don't even
know. I don't know. Let's just say I take $2 million to get Kipchoge to both those races.
There you go. Okay, I like that. That's good.
Now I'm down to $5 million, which I think could give me, I could do a meet with like three events. But I don't know what I want yet. I'd have to wait until after the season. It probably would be a men's 400 hurdle race, a women's 400 race, and then there's probably one other that I'm not thinking of that would jump out that I would want.
Yeah, we could work together some pretty
The thing is, with my money, it would not be an investment. It would be a one-time thing. It would be wasted, and I would enjoy it for an hour and a half, and then it'd be gone. And that would be it. There would be no... Yeah, because it's not like I can... I can't build anything with $7 million, can I?
No, not really. I mean... Just want to build yourself a new house and.
Well, no, I'm talking about like a stadium or something.
No,
like
yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, it goes fast in track.
Yeah,
that's for sure. But I would try to put on the dream meet. The problem is, I just don't think 7 would get me very far with the dream meet.
Yeah, I think you could end up getting.
Could I use it to bribe people? Is that allowed?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Well, I guess $7 million is not a good enough bribe either.
What are we trying to bribe?
I don't know. Maybe get the world championships back in Eugene just to make everybody angry. No?
I mean, I imagine Qatar. I imagine that legal thing they did was
they can go,
that.
They can go higher than 7, right? Yeah. All right. Here is... Ryan from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
This might be a terrible take, but based on Hassan's 156.800 meter PB mentioned last week, I think Hassan could have won the 800 and marathon at the 2019 World Championships. The 800 that year was won in 158. There's no way 351 shape Hassan can't run 157 or faster. The marathon was won in 232, aka at the time Hassan could jog. Even if it was hot, Hassan showed in Tokyo she can run well in heat and humidity. The only thing that might have stopped her from winning both is the schedule. The prelims for the 800 were at 5:10 p.m. on day one, and the marathon was at midnight. Yeah, less than ideal. Day one is easy. Run a 202 800 is a shakeout. Come back a couple hours later and jog a long run at 70 seconds. at 70 seconds a mile slower than her 10K pace. Coming back for the 800 semis after the marathon gets done at 2:30 a.m. Oh, I didn't even see that. Would be tough. And it's the only thing making me doubt Hassan could have pulled this off. If the women's marathon was on day 9, like it was for the men, I'm confident Hassan would have gotten the double. Please talk me out of this ridiculous take. That is Ryan from Wisconsin. Thank you for the message. I disagree. In this scenario, is this her first ever marathon? Because
yeah.
I was there for that. The weather was so bad.
Yeah.
It was, I know he says she dealt with the heat in Tokyo, and it was beyond anything you could ever comprehend, which is why it was at midnight, and why Ruth Chepin-Gegich, I think, won that race. See how good she is now, and she ran 2:32. I mean, it was a tactical, it was just complete soup out there. However, if it was when the men's race was later on, the weather was a little bit better. Maybe she's got a shot, but she would still have to have beaten one of the best marathoners in the world, and we just don't know how good she is at the marathon yet. I agree on the 800, though.
At the time,
I think we said that,
we
right?
We were saying, like, Hassan could win the 800. Like, I think we were both bought into that fact. So definitely don't disagree there. Yeah, the marathon's a little more out there as she you know, kind of shifted longer distance over the next couple years. But, like, I think she would have had a puncher's chance at it, which is, you know, like I said, if the schedule was moved. Yeah, with that current schedule, that seems a bit much. But I think there's at least a possibility, because Hassan's probably the only person I would ever say that about, because
yeah,
she was just, I mean, you know, her resume says it all.
Yeah. All right, we got one more.
Yeah.
This is from Brian Wilson, not the Beach Boy.
Yeah.
Hey guys, after Marshall's email last week about following the church's lead in how to grow track, I wanted to share my experience getting involved in the sport. I started running in 7th grade, and through high school, I remained one of the most passionate and committed runners you could find. However, I didn't give a single hoot about the pro scene. I never heard anyone talking about pro running outside of Usain Bolt until one random easy run with the club team in college at the beautiful and iconic University of Cincinnati. One guy recommended House of Run, and I decided, you know what? I love the sport so much, maybe I should pay attention to the biggest things being achieved in it. So I started listening to the podcast, and my impression was, I have no idea who any of these athletes are or what these guys are talking about. But I stubbornly kept listening, and over time became familiar with names and storylines and began to enjoy the pro running scene. However, I still rarely watch meets, don't engage on social media much, and don't listen to any other running podcasts. Everything I know about running world, I heard first and only from you two, so don't let me down. I am the 99.9%. That being said, I'm excited to hear about a thing Mo going to train with Kersey. The discussion of what Mo and Sydney will do got me thinking, what do you think a bolder, more difficult goal would be for Sydney? Breaking the world record in the 400 or dethroning Mo in the 800? What's with this Sydney running the 800 thing? What is going on?
Because 400 meter hurdle runners are great at the 800, Kevin. You got to accept this.
Okay. What? Okay, go ahead.
I mean, she probably could be great at the 800 if she like shifted her focus fully to that. Like, you don't think that's crazy, do you? Just how insane of an athlete she is.
Oh, yeah. She'd be really good. I just, when she says, I'm going to do this other thing, I think we should believe her, especially when that other thing is not going to be something she can check a box on and be done with overnight.
For sure. What do you think, I guess, with Brian's question here, what's more difficult? Setting the 400 meter world record or moving up to the 8?
The moving up to the 8 and beating Mo, assuming, let's just say a thing Mo, like she runs 155, just for the sake of argument. So basically you're saying Sydney would have to run 155 low to beat her and everybody else.
Yeah, I think Mo's going to get faster. Like, she's still so young. I think she's going to be at 154, 153, you know, and at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's harder. And I think the 47.6 is very hard. And I think that would be even harder because you just, again, my theory here is you just don't know what someone has when you bump up in distance or go down in distance. Just like we don't know what Stefan Hassan will do in a marathon. We just don't know what Sydney would do in an 800. So I would say that would be harder than the 47.6. But I'm not one of those people who think automatically she's going to get the 47.6 just because she said that she was going to do it or she said she wants to do it. Like, that's a ridiculous mark. So
for sure. Yeah, I think in a normal, maybe non a thing Mo You know, if it was like where, hey, the best in the world are running 156, 157 every year, I'd be like, you know, I believe Sydney with like a year training would be the best 800 meter runner in the world. Like, I do believe that. I think Mo is special, and I think she's going to continue to get faster. And so not only switching, but switching and becoming like a top 10 all-time 800 meter runner or something like that is a really big ask. And I think I'm a little higher on her being able to break 47.6.
Yeah.
Well, both are insane, but both are, I think I agree that the eight in this case, but that's also just because I believe how good a thing Mo is.
Like what's more likely to happen? The Bucks going 80-2 or Giannis averaging 52 points a game? It's like, well, all right.
52 points a game, I think.
Is it? Yeah, probably. Okay, that's a bad
two. I think 80-2 seems impossible. But.
Okay. Well, maybe I shouldn't have said, maybe I should have said like 75-7 or something.
Okay,
like that.
There you go. That could be, yeah.
Stop fact-checking my hypotheticals, Jason. What was the other question? Oh, okay. So, I think he's the exception when he talks about how he only gets his news from the pod.
Yeah, I wonder with that. I mean, I'd be intrigued, I guess, like how many listeners to this show, like, don't watch much, like don't watch much pro meets and things like that outside of maybe, you know, championships. Like how many people are like, hey, Brussels Diamond League is this week. I'm going to make sure, even if you don't watch it live, but you're like, I'm going to watch that this week.
Mm-hmm.
I would be curious just how many people go, I'll look up the results and maybe I'll catch a highlight or two on Twitter or something.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of podcasts I listen to where that's my only connection with the topic.
Yeah.
And there's not, I can't think of many, but if a podcast ever touches on pop culture, that's probably the first time I'm hearing about it is on that podcast, maybe. But that's different because that's something with multiple topics. This is just like all one thing. We're only talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of tough. It's like
the sport, but I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, thank you for listening and trusting us to be your news source. It probably has warped your view of what is or is not important in running. I can say that.
Yeah. I mean, but definitely appreciate the listening and, try to have reasonable takes even in between our terrible ones.
Yeah. I don't know if it's even necessarily the takes or just the new, like, did he not know that the trials were in Orlando until I said it? Maybe. If he's consuming
something like that, like I could see, like if you're not on, if you don't go to, you know, whatever Flow Track or some of the running websites or, you know, you're just not like on like track Twitter. Like I could see that's something that you just would not know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's like, how substantial is that 14 months out?
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Someone tweet, you know, like all the people, we follow and that I follow, I'm like, oh yeah. Like I see that pop up. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But it's not something that maybe I would have known otherwise.
Yeah. No, you're right. We have these information communities out there and you can know every little detail about something and then just be in another little universe and not even know it existed.
Right.
Which is crazy, especially with sports, right? You can create a timeline where college basketball is the most important thing in the world. And you can create another timeline where the sport literally doesn't exist unless something insane happens and then it breaks through to a mainstream timeline.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
All right. The email address is houseofrun@gmail.com. Write in. We need emails for next week. We're all caught up on the email inbox. Jason, you got any trips planned recently? Coming up.
We got since we didn't do our Portland trip, which was going to be a little bit around Halloween stuff. Johnny, my wife, she was very upset. Yeah, that's what I. And so we're gonna try to find some spot that has like a really cool Christmas vibe to it. You know, like that some towns, you know, go really really all out for that stuff. So we're gonna try to plan something for December. I'll also be going to Wisconsin for work in a couple weeks. But
that's what I was wondering. I want to know about your work trips. I didn't want to know about your... Are you going to take notes when you see the Christmas lights? Like, ah, okay, yep, this is how they're going to do it. I need a rig up here.
I mean, I kind of do that with Halloween stuff. So I do need to step up the Christmas stuff a little bit.
Where in Wisconsin? Same place?
Yeah, Green Bay.
Oh, so you're a return visitor now.
Yeah, yep. It's, you know. It's a nice little town. Packers are not playing, so that's good. So I don't have to see as much Packer stuff because there's already tons of Packer stuff. Well, but on the bright side, the Packers are terrible. So
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. You could wear your Bears gear out there.
Justin Fields. I kept telling people he's great. I'm in 100%. I was in 100% 3 weeks ago before he was great, and now I'm feeling really good.
Are they gonna make the playoffs?
No, probably not. But the only thing about this season that I really cared about was Justin Fields being good. Because in the NFL, like, you need a good quarterback. Obviously, that's the most important thing you could have. And he's got all the talent in the world. And they finally, a few weeks ago, changed, like, the plays to make it be things he's good at.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of, like, things that did not make sense. And so they did that. He looks like the real thing. And I'm really excited.
Nice. Well, enjoy.
Bears never have a good quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. You've waited long enough. You've waited so long for a quarterback.
Bears fans are super pumped right now, and people are probably like, hey, calm down. But I say no, because
we've
never had this before. So let us be excited.
Yeah, enjoy your quarterback. All right, until next week.
Jessica Ennis, I hope you voted. I mean, not you, because you can't here, but you know what I mean.